Welcome to the DNA Talks podcast, where we take on the mission of unlocking the code of your genetics. This season is all about you, upgrading your health, not just on the surface, but down to the root cause. Join us as your clinicians at the DNA Company investigate your DNA and beyond. The intention of this podcast is to enhance your lifestyle by changing what is in your control. This does not substitute the medical advice given by your personal doctor, therapist, and other healthcare professionals. All right, everyone, we have a treat for you today. What's this treat? Well, let me tell you, I guess it was a couple of years ago, I was at a trade show. We had our booth set up, and we were waiting for people to come learn about genetics and how to reverse chronic disease. And I kept seeing all this traffic behind me. I was like, why is this guy getting all the customers? What's going on here? So when we had a break, I go see the guy. And he seemed to be the OG. The OG meaning everybody knew him. Everybody was using his products. Everybody knew that his stuff was great. And I was new to the environment. You know, it was actually a conference in Texas. And I was like, well, who's this guy? So I started looking and I saw some incredible things happening there. And I started to learn from him. In fact, that things were possible I didn't think were possible in terms of formulations and things that you could do to help people. And so since then, we've been meeting, we've been talking, we became friends. He's actually helping us with some other things. And we had to have Gary on. And you're going to find out why if you keep listening. So first of all, thanks for joining. It's awesome to have you here.
Thanks, Cash. Thanks for having me.
Yes. And the first thing that happened was I walked around the corner, went to your booth, and I saw Neosporin. And I was like, wait a second, it's spelled wrong. There's something going on here. And then I was like, what is this guy up to? And then I started to see other things. And I realized that he was taking all of what the things that I talk about that are making us sick, like sunscreen, you know, topical type treatments, and making hyper clean versions of them that have amazing efficacy. Because this guy sits in the back of his lab and does the chemistry himself and has come up with some incredible stuff. So, you know, first of all, yeah, I know you have a cool story about that Neosporin and what happened and where that came from. But tell us about your background and how you even got here.
Tortuous background, right? Tortuous path, anyway.
Yeah.
So my background is too many degrees. Chemistry and mechanical engineering undergrad, master's in chemi, doctorate in chemical engineering. So you're like, well, how does this guy even know anything about health and wellness? And the answer is, well, I didn't study health and wellness, you know, starting out. My background was I worked for Celanese in Charlotte, North Carolina, went to IBM in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. IBM actually paid for me to get my doctorate in chemical engineering, and then Gerstner showed up, and I left IBM after 13 years. Hard to do. And eventually wound up working for the Japanese at Mitsubishi Chemical, and that's how I got to become a registered patent agent and get involved in intellectual property. My health journey was that I started to surf. I didn't even start until age 30, so it was one of the hardest things to accomplish physically. I said, how hard could it be? And then I found out. And I was, you know, the older guy surfing with the younger guys, and at two different times, I had two 20-year-old guys that I surfed with. Both of them at different times got diagnosed by different doctors with melanoma.
Right.
And no history in the family. And I was like, what the heck? You know, I'm already older than they are, and I don't want to get melanoma. Yeah. So they got told by their doctors, you know, either quit surfing or you're going to get melanoma again. So at age 20, at different times, both of them quit surfing and were afraid to get in the sun. So I said, well, the sun actually is pretty good for you. We need, you know, vitamin D. And so I said, well, maybe I need to look into this sunscreen situation. So as a member of the American Chemical Society, going all the way back to the 80s, I get a journal article every week, CNN News, which is Chemical and Engineering Newsweek. And what happened is there was a front page article on sunscreen. This was back in 2000, 2001. And there was a lady, Margaret Schlumpf, a toxicologist at the University of Zurich in Switzerland. The University of Zurich, the Toxicology Institute. And I actually had her send me her monograph, which in those days, you know, you still weren't getting much off the internet. The internet was still in its infancy. So she actually mailed it to me. And I started investigating what she had done. And she decided that she was going to take the active sunscreen ingredients and slather them on to the back of female rats. Hmm. And when she did that, what she found was that all the active organic sunscreen were female mimicking hormones, were endocrine disruptors.
Right.
And the way she determined it, the uterus of the female rats grew abnormally large very, very quickly. Hmm. So fast forward to about 2 years later, and in Denmark, they decided to take all the sunscreen off the shelves.
Oh, wow.
And the EU said, wait a minute, you crazy Danes, you can't do that. Yeah. You should not be able to take it all off the sun, you know. And so the Danes said, well, okay, we'll put it back on because we are a member of the EU, but we're going to do a study. Mm. And the study that they did, which was published 4 years later, was that in fact, these were endocrine disruptors, female mimicking hormones, and that it wasn't that bad because it only got into the urine and the blood plasma. and that it was only really bad for babies and small children because, you know, their immune system isn't fully developed yet. So you should be careful with that. Yeah. But otherwise, you know, it's okay. And then fast forward another year, and a professor from School of Public Health in Harvard did a study and said that the title of it wasn't really a study, it was a review. And the title of it was, if it's a choice between the hamburgers or the cheeseburgers and the sunscreen, I'll take the sunscreen. She was comparing the health effects of cheeseburgers to the health effects of using toxic sunscreen.
Right.
Well, while all this was going on, I decided that I could make a non-endocrine disrupting, cytoprotective, immuno-enhancing sunscreen. And actually, I have some. So that's in this box here. This is the unscented version. I make an aromatherapeutic one as well. And I was hired by Burt's Bees. At the time, Burt's Bees was independently owned to become their SPF director, sun protection factor director. And that lasted for about 9 months until they were purchased by Clorox, that said, we don't want any contractors. We don't, you know, we want to get rid of all that. So rather than get involved in litigation and, you know, not honoring the contract, whatever, blah, 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 I was advised, look, you've got a really good product here that you're commercializing. Why don't you, you know, try to take it to the next step and, you know, sell it. And here I am 15 years later.
Amazing.
And we make the sunscreen that nobody else makes.
This is so cool. It's a problem that a lot of people are now talking about. You see a lot of people online that are sort of health and wellness influencer types, let's say. And sunscreen is a very common topic now because we know it's so hormone disrupting. We know the forever chemicals that are in there. And we know that it's so commonly widespread and used as a protective mechanism to mask, again, something that's supposed to be healing. Like the sun is what you need to get out there and absorb for life, and we treat it as death. And I think it's more so the food itself that's triggering the inflammation levels where we can't deal with the sun, you know? But it's awesome.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, what people ask me a lot, of course, I get a ton of questions, right? Because we've been to conferences together.
Yeah.
Where you've done most of the speaking and I've been in the booth trying to lather sunscreen onto people, but not lather. That's probably a bad word, but that's what people do with it. So vitamin D. So it turns out that, you know, people always ask me, well, if I use sunscreen, you know, is it going to do me more harm than good? And the answer is, well, it depends what kind of sunscreen you use, but it also depends on, you know, are you going to cover yourself so much that you don't get any vitamin D? And the answer is no way.
Yeah.
It's not possible. First of all, you know, unless you really dip coat yourself literally in a vat of sunscreen, you're not going to block all the vitamin D that you absorb from the sun. Mm. What's interesting about this, and this has taken me a long time to actually determine, is, you know, in 20 minutes, if you're Caucasian or light skinned, in 20 minutes in direct sunlight, you're going to get all the vitamin D you need for the day. Right. And even if you're darker skin, you know, 30, maybe 40 minutes. Well, turns out that's very interesting because sunscreen SPF is all about sun protection factor, is all about UVA and UVB, but UVB is SPF. So what does that mean? Well, it's UVA, which are the long penetrating rays, which cause DNA damage, aging, and wrinkling, much more than the UVB. The UVB are the short, high energy burst rays, which turn your skin red and tell your body, hey, look, you've been in the sun long enough to get all the vitamin D you need for the day. Now you're starting to get overexposed. Mm-hmm. You're getting overexposed. Your sun, your skin's starting to burn, telling you, hey, get out of the sun. Well, if you surf or you're active outside, at least for me, you know, in 20 minutes, I'm just getting in the water.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm already overexposed by definition before I even do anything.
Yeah.
Well, if you take that 20 minutes and you multiply it by SPF 30, let's just say sun protection factor 30, everybody knows because of the FDA, everybody knows SPF is sun protection factor. They want 30. They want at least 30. Why? Well, 30 times 20 minutes before you start to turn pink gives you 600 minutes of protection from UVB only. Has nothing to do with UVA, not anything at all. So when the tests are done for SPF, you go under a heat lamp, literally, and they see how long it takes for your skin to start to turn red in the presence of the sunscreen that they're testing. Mm. Well, 600 minutes, again, 20 minutes of exposure times an SPF sun protection factor of 30 is 600 minutes, which is 10 hours of protection from what? From UVB only. So you're still going to get exposure, overexposure for all those hours to UVA. And that's going to cause DNA damage, aging, wrinkling, as we said. And if your immune system's impaired, like my poor 20-year-old guys that ate at McDonald's every day, sorry that I had to pick on McDonald's, but you know what I mean, fast food, their immune system was probably impaired.
Yeah.
And even at age 20, if you're getting fried in the sun every day and you surf, you know, the whole week, or you even surf a couple of days and you get burnt, well, you know, it's not surprising that you might get melanoma, at least some form of skin cancer. And if you live to be 65 in the United States or North America, there's a 50-50 chance you'll get some form of skin cancer. So obviously the sunscreens, something's going on, right? The sun might be different. The ozone layer might be different. That's all true. But the sunscreens aren't very... The sunscreens you're buying are water soluble, water based. And so what happens is they evaporate as soon as they hit the skin. So there's no way you're getting 10 hours of protection. But even if you were getting 10 hours of protection, it's only from UVB. So what I decided to do is develop a sunscreen that has a glycerin base. So this product here is glycerin based. And the aromatherapeutic came from muscle testing, and we can talk about that in a minute. And the glycerin never evaporates. So what you put on your skin from what we've developed will stay on your skin for the entire time you're doing whatever you're doing before you wash it off. Or if you're in the ocean or swimming in a pool and you're in a fairly humid environment, there's going to be some sunscreen that'll come off. Our product is glycerin-based. So 70% of our product is glycerin. 70% of every other sunscreen is water. So right there, there's a huge difference. The other problem with mineral-based sunscreens, which some of them are not very toxic, some of them are very good, but all of them turn into toothpaste. And there's a reason for that. So over time, what happens is zinc oxide in water and oil turns into zinc hydroxide, which is a salt. So you may have heard the expression salting out. So what happens is the mineral-based sunscreens, whether they be titanium dioxide or zinc oxide, and sometimes there's a blend, sometimes zinc oxide only, but zinc oxide really, really is the best UVA and UVB absorber, but it's a metal oxide. It's not a salt. Mm-hmm. If you add water and oil to it, it's usually at a pH of around 5 or so, it becomes zinc hydroxide. Zinc hydroxide is a salt. It's not a metal oxide anymore, and it doesn't absorb the same way. So what I do to break it down to make it very simple for folks is I say, look, what we've done is we've taken what the lifeguards put on their nose, which is the pure zinc oxide paste, almost everybody's seen lifeguards do that. Mm-hmm. And we've made it into a lotion so that it never, ever changes into zinc hydroxide. Mm. We do that two ways. We use the glycerin, which is not water or oil. We get the pH above 9 and 9.5, which at 9.5, zinc oxide cannot become zinc hydroxide. And we chelate our zinc oxide with L-arginine, which is an amino acid, as you probably very well know, and your listeners probably know. So again, we take everything and everything we make, not just our sunscreen, but everything we make, we say, if you wouldn't put it in your mouth, don't put it on your skin. And of course, we make supplements now too, so that's obvious. But all of our ingredients, and I think this is what, you know, attracted you to our booth and talking about things, all of our ingredients are food grade, edible ingredients, not sourced from any place like China. Okay, so we really do use, you know, everything's made in the United States, which is nowadays a big deal. And we source everything that we can from either the US or Europe. The only thing we source out of China, to our dismay, is a tube that we use for the Nutrisporin, which you mentioned, the Nutrisporin product.
Got it.
So anyway, that's how my journey started, is developing this sunscreen, this very special sunscreen. We call it artisanal because we make it in a small batch, about 1,500 units at a time. And there's nobody on the planet that would spend the time or the effort to make the sunscreen the way we make it. And it's regulated by the FDA, so it has to be an OTC facility. It means over-the-counter facility. We have to have a special water system. It's quite an arduous task, actually.
So,
and of course, everything is patented. Sorry.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we're going to get into that too with your brilliance around that one. So if I heard you correctly, somebody puts on their sunscreen and they walk out the door, there's no obligation on their claim to protect you from UVA, meaning a sunscreen manufacturer to be able to use those words, SPF 30, it's only being tested for UVB.
That is 100% correct, but they do, a lot of the sunscreens say broad spectrum protection, and right, that means they also have UVA protection. However, it's normally avobenzone. Okay. So avobenzone is an organic sunscreen. It's an endocrine disruptor. And in the presence of UV light, UVA and UVB light, avobenzone literally falls apart. In other words, and my background is polymer science and chemistry, what happens is the UV light actually slices up the molecule, splits the molecule. Mm. And so what happens is the molecule is no longer avobenzone, it no longer does its job. And you probably heard last summer the big deal was people were saying, well, there's benzene in sunscreen.
Right.
And that's true, because avobenzone and oxybenzone, which is a UVB absorber, avobenzene is both UVA and UVB absorber. Mm. In the presence of light, what happens, or heat, or both, what happens is the molecule that it splits off into is benzene. Mm. And benzene is a known carcinogen. So, you know, you've heard the expression that, you know, maybe using sunscreen is worse than not using any at all. Yeah. And I would say, well, if you're using organic sunscreens that are not mineral-based only, there's a high probability that there's some toxins in there, and that when the sun hits your skin and the stuff you put on is supposed to protect you from skin cancer, you're actually now developing toxins on the skin. And, you know, that's a horrible thing to have to say, but it's the truth. And it's not that the sunscreen doesn't work, quote unquote, because it'll stop you from burning, but it's giving you a false sense of security, right? Because now you think you're not getting red, so you have a tendency to stay in the sun longer, but you're getting that UVA, that's the long penetrating rays, which if you've ever woken up sore the next day from being overexposed in the sun, that's the UVA rays that are not necessarily turning your skin red, although they will eventually, but that are actually causing cells to do something, which in the polymer world is chain scission. The cells are splitting and the nerve cells are splitting. Wow. And so that's why you wake up sore, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's incredible. And this is maybe And we see these all symptoms all the time, and people think it's the activity, you know, that they're, and if you're not burned, you really think that you're okay, but there's other things going on. And it's not no surprise, because the company that's selling UVB protection will only talk about UVB damage, because that's marketing, right?
They're not, it is marketing, unfortunately.
You know,
well, and what happened was the FDA came out with their new monograph in 2011. The earlier monograph was 1978. What does that mean? Well, the FDA, in their infinite wisdom, has not really studied sunscreens, but every about 40 years. Because they got some other big problems on their hands, like white pills that kill people. So sunscreen, though, is considered a drug because it goes on your largest organ, which is your skin. Yeah. And getting back to your point about UVB is, yes, but the thing is, all you hear about in the United States, and Europe is a little different, all you hear about in the United States is SPF, SPF, SPF. Yeah. So the FDA decided, well, we should take a little responsibility. You can't, supposedly, you cannot sell a product which has a higher than SPF 50 now. A lot of companies, we won't name them, sell SPF higher than that even still today. And that monograph, in other words, that law was passed in 2011. So here it is, what, 14 years later, almost 13 years later, and people are still selling SPF 70, 80, 100. And the difference between SPF 70, 80, 100 and SPF 30, as you know, has nothing to do with UVA.
Right.
So people are like, wow, I'm going to use SPF 100. I'll be very safe. Well, you might be somewhat more safe from UVB, but you're not going to be more safe from the killer stuff, right? The long penetrating energy rays that cause the DNA damage, the aging, the wrinkling, and if your immune system is impaired, skin cancer. I mean, that's how our bodies are working.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Try Pectisol Modified Citrus Pectin today and see for yourself how it can help you manage healthy inflammation levels to support your detox and weight loss goals. Listeners get 20% off with code UNPILL20 at ecoeugenics.link/UNPILL. That's ecoeugenics.link/UNPILLED.
There's this false sense of security which causes you to overexpose yourself and actually lead yourself to the thing you're trying to protect yourself from, which is over.
Yeah, you say, hey, you know, you've probably heard it with your own family or friends or whatever. You know, I'm not burnt.
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm not burning. Right. And if you go to places to surf like I've been, like Costa Rica, where the sun is intense.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't have anything on, you'll burn literally within 30 to 45 minutes, especially if you're, you know, if you're a Caucasian male from the United States, right, in a northern climate relatively. I mean, so yeah, it's unfortunately, skin cancer is an epidemic, and not only in this country. Europe, they do know that UVA is very important. They have what they call a Boots star rating, which I have on the back panel of our sunscreen as well. Our Boots star rating is 5 stars, which is the highest you can get. It's about UVA.
Got it.
So if you take SPF and Boots star rating, which is UVA, now you really have something you can talk about.
Yeah.
But as you said, it's marketing. People don't talk about 5-star ratings and UVA in the United States yet. We're behind Europe in that regard.
Got it. Yeah, because they don't do anything about it.
So you
continued to innovate after that, which is really cool. Because when we've been talking about sunscreen this whole time, to paint a picture of how we need to think functionally when it comes to solutions. Because keep in mind that the company that's making the off-the-shelf SPF protection, everything they're saying is likely correct, but what they're saying is not functionally true, because like you said, the thing that they test in a lab is true, but now take that thing into the environment you're in and it changes, right? And this is where the people that argue with studies, I think there's a major failure, where there's the you know, sort of context of a lab where everything is perfect and things are isolated and things are not practically applied. And for perfect example with the benzene, you know, nobody would ever say, hey, carcinogen, there's no carcinogens in here. yeah, not until you actually wear it and go out into the sun in the context you're going to use it in. That this is where studies are broken. So just everyone pay attention to that, because this is a common place where sort of academia will argue, you know, but the isolation of doing things in a lab is not reality. So you continue.
Yeah, and just to add to that for a split second is, you know, a lot of the sunscreens are made in alcohol for the sprays. The sprays are alcohol based.
Right.
And so a couple of years ago, they were talking about, well, somebody was trying to light their cigarette or whatever they were smoking. I don't know. And they lit themselves up. Whoa. because there was so much alcohol in the sunscreen. And of course, that spray delivery system is about as good as you can imagine. It's not very, it has the ability to give you, again, the false sense of security.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're selling. They're selling a false sense of security.
Yeah. So you did all this, and then you continued down this path. And what started with a company that screwed you and you walking away and doing something great with it turned into what I saw, an entire line of really cool things. And what was the next thing you went to market with? I know the work you do is incredible. You literally go in your lab and custom formulate these things and figure it out because you have a chemistry background. So what was the next thing you went on to?
So I'm looking around. I don't have it, but maybe I should get it, but I have Neutroleum. So one thing always leads to another.
Yeah.
So in prepping our sunscreen at the time, we had to move our facility 5 times since COVID. So it's been a little bit of a challenge, but we made something that we call Neutroleum. So it was a mistake in the lab, and mistakes in the lab are great because you can patent them usually. So of course we patented it, took a page from DuPont, which I used to work very closely with when I was an IBMer. And what we found was, if we added too much of seteroglucoside to glycerin, that we would actually get a reaction. And the reaction was that it gelled. And so one day while we were prepping for it, we came back the next morning and there it was, our prepped emulsifier with our glycerin had turned into something that looked just like Vaseline, which is petroleum jelly. So from that, we developed something called a Neutroleum product, which is just 2 ingredients. It's just glycerin and seteroglucoside. Seteroglucoside is a plant fat. If you ever boil vegetables, you'll see little globules come to the surface. Right. That is seteroglucoside. It's a long-chained carbohydrate, sort of a sugary-type substance. And, of course, glycerin is a sugary-type substance. Glycerin is a very unique molecule. It's sort of halfway between water and oil. When you mix those two together, you get Neutroleum. And if we add beeswax, High Mountain Desert Beeswax from Arizona, to be specific, we get something called water-resistant Neutroleum. And so that's how that next product started. And people don't know much about it, but we had a couple of people try to get in touch with us about, hey, do you guys have an alternative to petroleum jelly? Because we know we don't want to put polyaromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs, onto our skin, because those are carcinogenic too. Yeah. And that happens to be in all of the petroleum jelly, because petroleum jelly is the dregs of when you refine oil, you know, literally. It's what they scrape off the walls of the refinery after they've done, you know, thousands, millions of gallons of distillation of crude oil. So we make an alternative, food grade edible again, alternative to Vaseline or petroleum jelly, which we call Neutroleum, which of course we patented and trademarked. And then we were working with another gentleman in Richmond, Virginia, and he and I were doing chelation of metal oxides. He was chelating silver oxide, and I was chelating zinc oxide. So we honestly, you know, very about the same age, same background in terms of our chemistry experience. And I said one day in the lab, we said, you know, it would be nice if we could take this silver that you're making, which is only water-based,
yeah,
and we could infuse it into plastics. Well, long story short, we tried to figure out, could we put the chelated silver oxide that he was chelating with citric acid, could we put that into glycerin? By putting it into glycerin, which again does not evaporate and doesn't decompose until you get to about 370 degrees, which for polymers is a really good thing, because that's where you melt process polymers, about anywhere from 100 degrees C to 300-400 degrees C. So glycerin is very stable. So that led to this. So this product, I don't know if you can see it. So this product here is called Silver Excelsior. Mm-hmm. And it is 4,000 parts per million of chelated silver oxide. Now, what does that mean? Well, you probably know about colloidal silver. I'm sure most of your listeners know about colloidal silver, which is basically made in a bathtub with two electrodes, to oversimplify it. And that water that's in the bathtub is deionized or distilled water. You run electrodes between, you run two electrodes, one silver coated, one uncoated, and you run a wire between the two to give it some electrolysis, to run some energy. And what happens is the silver comes off the electrode and the silver ions try to migrate from the silver electrode to the non-silver coated electrode. And that's how you make the silver ions in water. And they sell that. You know, there's companies out there that sell it. I think people know who they are. Sovereign Silver, for example, Silver Wings, they sell colloidal silver. Mm-hmm. And those are silver ions in solution and they're inorganic ions. Well, we don't make that. We use chelated silver oxide, which we take a molecule of silver and a molecule of citric acid and we combine those two. And when we combine those two, we get an inorganic organic silver oxide compound, which is bioactive, bioavailable, and has an immediate effect on the cells because you know better than I do how the Krebs cycles work and what that means for energy for the cell, for ATP. Because again, I'm not a biologist, I'm a chemist. So, you know, what I know about the Krebs cycle is pretty limited. I just know that citric acid is vital for all living cells. Any cell, biological, human, mammal, animal cells, they all literally suck citric acid up as a food source to create energy and keep the cell healthy. Mm-hmm. So our silver oxide chelated at 4,000 parts per million is because we don't use electrodes in water. We buy silver powder and chelate it with citric acid. And of course, all that's patented too.
Got it.
And of course, the FDA hates silver because it works.
It works really well. Works for what? Because people hear about it, but they're like, when do I need it? Why do I need it? For what?
Yeah, exactly. So it works for, so it is antimicrobial, antibacterial, antifungal, anti-mold, anti-mildew. Why? Because the silver ions themselves have an effect on anything that's infectious bacteria. Like two things happen. One is silver, the silver itself, the silver particles themselves, destroy the surface on which bacteria must attach to grow. So bacteria is sort of like us in a way. Bacteria has three requirements: food and water, like us. You know, in other words, it needs to have something to eat, it needs to have a water-based system, and it needs a surface to grow on. Well, the silver destroys the surface for the bacteria to grow on. In other words, the bacteria has a hard time attaching to a surface if you've got silver in whatever system the bacteria is trying to attach to. Right. And then in addition to that, the metal oxides, and it's not just silver oxide, it's tin oxide, lead oxide, all the metal oxides are antibacterial and antimicrobial by definition. They have the ability to basically change the structure or wipe out the structure of the bacteria. And people don't realize, like, anybody who's a boater knows that they coat the bottom of boats with usually copper oxide or titanium dioxide or zinc oxide paint that is antibacterial and antimicrobial, so barnacles can't grow on the bottom of the hull of the boat. So this is a well-known metal oxide feature, is that it wipes out infectious bacteria. And it turns out that silver, at very low concentrations, is also very, very good and healthful and not toxic. But the FDA would have you believe that it's going to turn you blue. It's something called arginosis. And arginosis literally means that, it's hard to believe this, and arginosis literally believes sickness from silver.
Right.
So there was a guy in Kentucky, turned himself into a Smurf, literally blue.
Yep.
The guy turned out passing away from a heart attack. He didn't die from an overdose of silver. Mm-hmm. And he literally pumped himself full of silver every day for months and months, years, for years, until he turned himself blue, his skin blue. But people don't realize what this is all about. So it turns out the term blue blood is from the French aristocracy. Mm-hmm. And what happened is the French aristocracy were very pale. They ate off of silver every single day, morning, noon, and night, all their meals. Mm-hmm. Their skin started to look a little bluish because their blood literally turned somewhat bluish. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the term blue blood. However, what people don't talk about is that the French aristocracy did not die during the bubonic plague, which right. happened to be from bacteria that was being spread by rats.
Yeah. Yeah, it's known, but it's not spoken of because the answer opens your eyes to something that people don't want you to know, which is that if you have enough silver, you know, you're resilient against a lot of things that even things we just went through where we could have got a lot of help, you know. This is where there's that, again, thinking of things practically, the aristocracy ate off of silver, yes, because it was a precious metal, but also because it was safe, right?
Like, right.
In a time that wasn't that hygienic. And if you had utensils that were made out of silver, you didn't have to worry, you know?
Exactly. I mean, let's put it this way. Food poisoning is not a new thing, right?
Yeah, sure.
And it turns out, so a couple of things about the silver is, creative minds, right? So a couple of things about the silver. So it turns out that, first of all, we don't recommend somebody take 4,000 parts per million. We dilute it down and we make a spray, which is only 150 parts per million, which is still 15 times what colloidal silver is. We found our sweet spot by doing testing for microbial organisms was anywhere between 75 ppm and 150 to 200 ppm. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a lot, but it's not. It's still 99.9925% water and glycerin and only 0.075% yeah. Silver, because parts per million is such a low concentration, right? But it also turns out that if you ever get E. coli poisoning, and I hate to tell people this, but if you're eating out or you're traveling like you and I do, you're going to be exposed to E. coli, right. Unfortunately. And even if you wash your hands and whatever precautions you take, and everybody found this out during COVID, you know, you can't stop infectious bacteria and or viruses from spreading. And so E. coli will give you food poisoning. And when you travel, a great idea is to have some of this, because if you drink this if you ever have even the suspicion of stomach issues because of what you ate or drank, the chelated silver oxide, it has an immediate effect. We were at a wedding 15 years ago, and we were getting pictures taken the hottest day of the year in Germany at midnight. My daughter got sick. She went down, couldn't find her. 3 o'clock in the morning, took her back to the bride's house. 3 o'clock the next afternoon, she woke up hungry. Mm. If you've ever had food poisoning, it doesn't happen. You wake up thinking, what was it that I ate that I never want to see again? Right? Yeah. So this is the antidote. The silver oxide is the antidote to any E. coli, any MRSA. So fast forwarding again. So now we have the neutroleum gel. And now we have the silver, right? And so I said, you know, it'd be interesting if we could put the silver into the gel. So we had a woman come to me, this is 10 years ago now, and she said, you know, zinc oxide leaves a residue in diapers. And a lot of my women, they have a diaper service, and the diaper service leaves the zinc oxide residue in the diaper. And we want something that works, that'll wipe out, you know, diaper rash, but will wash out in the laundry, because the diaper service will either throw away the diaper and charge us for it or bring us new diapers, you know, which we have to pay more money for. So, and we can't get rid of the residue from zinc oxide because it leaves that white powdery residue. I said, well, we can do that with the silver oxide. We put the silver oxide in the neutroleum gel, and initially we call it rash block, and we use 75 parts per million. And that rash block product, which is here. This is a small version of it. We make a 3 ounce too. The rash block is got the neutroleum gel, which is infused with the silver, and it washes out in the laundry, and it not only stops diaper rash, it prevents it from coming back. And it's not, and so it washes out because, again, you're only talking such a small concentration of silver. Silver is very expensive, but small concentrations of silver you can make. And you can actually make products that, well, be nice to make some money from, but we don't do very well on that. But anyway, so that's the next product that happened. And then people didn't really know what Ras Block was. So one day I was like, just thinking about it. I said, well, what's out there that people know? Well, they know Neosporin. Mm-hmm. And so we said, you know what, maybe let's call our product Nutrisporin, which I thought, I don't know if I can get that trademark. Well, of course, I'm in the business. We got the trademark.
Yeah,
it was not opposed, which is amazing. And of course, we patented it. And Neosporin is not what people think it is, mostly. So if you go online, you can see that Neosporin does not touch MRSA. It allows it to proliferate. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, why is that true? Well, it turns out bacteria is very smart. And antibiotics, which Neosporin is a triple biotic cream or gel, it turns out that antibiotics wipe out certain strains of bacteria, as you know, but they don't touch others. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out the triple biotics that are used, the mycins that are used to wipe out the bacteria that Neosporin is used to help wipe out, do not touch MRSA, which is Staphylococcus. And of course, that therefore allows it to proliferate because now it has no competition. So MRSA just keeps growing, right? And so people don't realize Muhammad Ali died of MRSA in the hospital, but of course the hospital couldn't release that information. They would have been fined and lost all their funding. But that's what happened. And of course it happens in the hospital all the time. You go in, you get a MRSA infection and, you know, God help you, right? Staphylococcus. I mean, it's deadly and it's deadly pretty fast. So it turns out our silver wipes that out. Wipes it out. Okay. And it wipes out all the other infectious bacteria. We haven't found an infectious bacteria that the silver doesn't wipe out. Well, going forward a little bit further, we had a call about six, seven years ago from a woman in Bremerton, Washington, Sue Honan. She ran two nursing care facilities. She's retired now. And she called me and said, you know, Gary, your Nutrisporin is wiping out my UTI, my urinary tract infection. And she goes, I want to run a study in our nursing care facility. The state of Washington will pay for it. I didn't even know where she was in Washington. She's on the west side of Seattle, Bremerton, which I never had been. I said, I'll come there. I'll make a presentation. I'll bring you all the Nutrisporin you want. Long story short, we did the study, preclinical, 12 patients. They all had UTI issues. They were all women. They were all incontinent. They were all having UTI problems. They had one woman there on hospice. She was getting UTI every week. What happened was we started applying the Nutrisporin directly to the urethra. The nurses did it, of course, to the urethra directly, a dime size, morning, noon, and night to this poor patient who was having not only UTI every week, but getting antibiotics every week and was on hospice and was losing her life. She was going down fast. Mm-hmm. And it turns out she never got another UTI. She lived 9 more months on hospice in the nursing care facility, never got another UTI. So it not only stopped the infection, it stopped it from ever happening again.
That's incredible, because it's the antithesis of pharma, which is like, let's just maintain your state. You know, here's a disease that you now have and we're going to manage it for you. So it's not going to get extreme, but you got it. And what you're saying is there's a way to cure it and fix it, which is dangerous words to use if you don't want to get shadow blind and censored and blocked.
We don't state anywhere that we cure anything. But that's, you know, that, so that's the story of how we migrated from sunscreen all the way to Nutrisporin, which of course was never something I anticipated when I started all this. Right. And now obviously we want to help people with that. We've had so many stories with so many women, mostly women, some men too. Because if you get catheterized, you can get UTI. But UTI is urinary tract infection is a big deal. And of course, there's all these medications out there. Some of them work, most of them don't. And of course, the problem is UTI is from bacteria, mostly from incontinence, because let's face it, food and water is what urine is for bacteria. Mm-hmm. And these women, a lot of them that are in the nursing care facility, they don't even know they're incontinent, but they are. But young women, I've had women of all ages come to us and say, hey, your stuff just wipes it out. So you can drink the silver, which helps internally. But you can also apply it directly through the Nutrisporin and or rash block. And then, you know, I said, wow, this chelation thing with citric acid is pretty cool, because citric acid is really something that you can take an inorganic substance or even an organic substance, and now you've got citric acid attached to it because it's pretty reactive, and you can make something like D3K2. So, you know, this is what we call liquid sunshine. You can chelate the D3 with citric acid. K2 is pretty insoluble, but if you don't have D and K together, at least from the studies I've read, you're not going to absorb vitamin D very well. So D3K2 we make, and we also, I said, well, if I can do that, I'd like to see, can I chelate zinc? So we make something called high Z instead of high C with citric acid and zinc. And so those are two supplements that we make. And then we also make a liver cleanse, which has four herbs. And we use magnesium citrate there instead of citric acid. Magnesium citrate, if anybody has ever had a colonoscopy, they know you have to drink this propylene glycol substance, which is toxic crap. Well, I recommend you take magnesium citrate. That'll do the same thing. It'll clean you out, clean your liver, clean your bowels, clean your intestines, everything. And you won't be toxifying yourself with this propylene glycol crap, I call it. And we add four herbs from an organic farm, catnip, ginseng, dandelion, and alfalfa. And that's our liver cleanse product. So that's our supplements now that we have put together. And of course, the reason for that was primarily due to, I had a lot of people that were involved with me that said, hey, I'd like something that gets rid of my hangover. I like to drink wine and I like to drink at night. And then I wake up with a headache. I said, well, you got to cleanse the liver. And then that was 2018, 2019, and then COVID happened. And if anybody's been exposed to COVID, had COVID, been vaccinated for COVID, I can just tell you right now, your liver's been affected. So all of a sudden, you know, people are now looking for liver health because almost everyone who lived through COVID has had some liver impairment.
Right.
And what you want to do is you want to feed the liver with those herbs. Those aren't the only ones. There's others that are just as good or better. In some cases, milk thistle, for example, artichoke, really good for the liver. In fact, artichoke looks like a liver. And of course, those together with the magnesium citrate, which cleanses the liver, is what I would consider the best way to do it. You know, it doesn't mean our products are the best to do it. It's other people make good products too to help supplement the liver. I just don't believe, I've learned this over the years, I don't believe that capsule supplements by themselves are very effective unless they're solubilized somehow. Now that, you know, it depends what you're trying to accomplish with the supplement, but I always believe that, you know, a liquid supplement is much more bioactive and bioavailable. As soon as it hits, you know, your mouth, it's starting to be absorbed and you don't have to wait for it to go through your intestinal tract, to get the effect. But of course, in some cases, you want the supplement to get down into the intestinal tract and not get absorbed on the way down. So it just depends on what you're trying to achieve. But my view is, and you may have a different view, liquid supplements are usually something that are, I think, much more readily absorbed into the body and much quicker.
Yeah, I feel like you just opened up a can of worms that we need another hour to talk about. and really important stuff, you know, like, and a couple of quick questions that come to mind because of what you're saying. So silver, is this something that somebody takes as a daily, or is it more in response to the gut issues and the, you know, I may have been exposed to something? And second thing with the liver cleanse, when you use the word cleanse, does that mean it's like a closed end protocol, or is it something that you do daily, regularly?
Yeah, great questions. Great questions, Cash. First of all, for the silver, my sister, for example, she uses it proactively. She'll take a tablespoon in the morning, a tablespoon at night. You know, in the morning when you wake up, you've been breathing in a lot of bacteria. Of course, hopefully it's good bacteria. I people always ask, well, with the silver, is it going to wipe out my probiotics or prebiotics? And the answer is, well, it might wipe out some good bacteria, but hopefully you're breathing in good bacteria every time you take a breath or drinking anything. You're bringing in good bacteria. It's the infectious bacteria you want to stave off. And your immune system, if it's healthy, is going to knock most of that out. But if your immune system is impaired, you know, the silver helps. So once in the morning, once at night is what she does. A lot of people do that. Tablespoon is fine. You know, again, what we sell is 150 parts per million in a big silver bottle, which, you know, the spray is 150 parts per million. We have a refill bottle for that. Or people can buy this, take one eyedropper full in 8 ounces of water, carry it with you on the plane, wherever you want, make your own 150 part per million product. But most people want RTD ready to drink. The other question you asked was about like bioaccumulation. The liver cleanse. Yeah, sorry. So the liver cleanse, again, I think that's a product that honestly, probably if you've got any issues with your liver, and most people do, I would say you can't take too much of it. I have a patent attorney friend from Korea. All he does is drink and does business development. And we were at a conference just the year before COVID. And he went upstairs, as he usually does, at about 11 o'clock at night to work, because he's got to, you know, do work with the back office in Korea, and then stays up till 3 or 4 in the morning and then goes to bed. He says, well, how much of this should I take? And we make it a two ounce bottle, you know, this size. And so but a little bit bigger. And I said, well, in your case, Jay, just take the whole thing. So he came down. He said, OK, the whole thing. I said, in your case, yes. So because he's drinking so much, you know, he's half sloshed before he goes upstairs. Yeah. So we said, we'll meet at 8 o'clock down here at the elevator in the lobby. I said, I'll be there. He comes down. He's got it in his hand. And he says, it works. Because he was completely clear headed when he woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning to get ready, because he only had 3 hours sleep. Wow. And he went to bed drunk. So the answer to your question about the liver cleanse is, you know, you can supplement with it, you know, an eyedropper full morning, noon, night, whatever. You can drink the whole thing if you decide you want to imbibe a little bit. But honestly, for the liver, as long as you're not taking in something that's going to be more toxic for the liver, you know, I recommend you do whatever you can to keep your liver healthy, because people don't realize, I guess, at least I didn't, that the liver is the largest internal organ, and everything filters through the liver. The liver is your filter system. Mm-hmm. You know, it's gonna remove toxins. That's what it's supposed to do, that and the gallbladder, before you get to your intestines. And I know a lot of people have gallbladder issues.
Yeah.
And have gallbladders removed because the gallbladder is not actively producing enough bile, right? The liver's producing bile that goes to the gallbladder, but the gallbladder is also responsible to regulate that. And all of the liver support stuff should, in theory, help the gallbladder. But you got to be careful, because the gallbladder is a separate organ, sort of a funnel in a way between the liver and the intestine. And so you can tell that I'm an engineer and a chemist, because I don't talk about biology too much. I talk about systems approach, right? So our body is a black box. Garbage in is garbage out. Good stuff in, good stuff out. That's how I sort of look at us as humans. You know, we're not machines, but we were built to be a system, an overall system. And keeping our health and keeping our closed system healthy is difficult, because we got outside influences, we got internal influences, and then we've got to get rid of all those toxins somehow, and we got to do it, you know, in a sustainable manner, right? To keep ourselves healthy.
So that brilliance you're talking about is exactly what's needed, because, you know, it's this health and wellness industry that we're all building together, it's a giant puzzle. You know, we're all putting our little piece in that puzzle. And without what you're talking about, there's a piece missing. You know, irrespective of the biologists out there saying that we know the body, okay, how many people have you helped? You know, like we need outcomes, and you're doing
right.
That. You're getting that right. Done. And this is why I use your products. And I literally had them sitting right in front of me in a basket, you know, and it's the only sunscreen the kids are allowed to touch. So I wanted to thank you, because, you know, what you downplay is like, hey, I'm just a guy that understands chemistry. Well, that's what the world needed from you, you know? And it's awesome. And it led us to some innovation where things that we didn't even know were hurting us, things that we didn't know we could benefit from, we now have access to. And it's so cool that you shifted gears and took your training and knowledge and applied it to a place where we weren't supposed to. And then all of a sudden we have this really good stuff. So I wanted to thank you, Gary. We're going to share with people how to reach you, where to find your stuff, because I think everybody should be looking at it. Purge your pantry, get rid of the garbage, get rid of the toxic sunscreens, get rid of the petroleum-based products, replace it with stuff that's aligned to health that Gary's been able to put his time into. And let's all thrive together. And thank you, Gary. This is an awesome conversation.
Thank you, Cash. Thanks for your time. Stay well. It's already spring, so make sure you put some stuff on your head.
Yeah, I need it more than most.
That's right. No skin cancer for you. I look forward to our next conversation. And obviously, I appreciate everything that the DNA Company's done, everything you've done to contribute to the health and wellness of all of us, which, as we both know, we can't leave it up to the powers that be. We've got to add something to this.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, 100%. Man.